Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to John Talk Radio. This is our 12th of December show of 2015. My special guest tonight is Ed Shuttleworth. Ed is has many bands he's been in. He was in the Ronald Cole Band. He was in the Black Owls. Current projects are Red Skylark, which we just heard the song Mother Faces from that project. He's also in a project with David Butler, Pretty Mugs, and with N Bucko. And Ed, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. It's great to have you on the show. It's been a while since we talked, and I know you got a lot of things going on, and I was just really excited when you sent me the new music because I'm a big fan of your music. So how are things going?
Things are great. I really appreciate you having me back on, and I'm really excited to talk about Red Skylark and Pretty Mugs and Bucko. And answer any questions you might have on any of the songs. I really appreciate you having me back.
Well, it's great to have you on. Immediately when I heard the Red Skylark record, I thought, wow, this is amazing. This is just incredible. And I think that one of the reasons I'm on this earth is to play music independent music that a lot of people don't get the chance to hear, and I'll play it as much as I possibly can on my shows, and to get people to hear this amazing music. Sometimes it's hard to crack that barrier that's out there, Ed, with getting people to hear the music. I guess the first thing, we got a lot to talk about, but the first thing I'd like to talk about is the music industry and what you think of it today, the good, the bad, what it's like to be an independent musician today. What are some of the challenges and what are some of the good parts?
Oh, man. That's
big
about
question.
The last thing I want to talk about. There's a lot of wonderful things about the state of the industry right now, and there's a lot of terrible things. It's never been harder, probably, to make a living selling music. Not that it ever was easy. It's never been easy. It's just like a lot of digitally available media, it's getting harder and harder to sell it. I shouldn't say it's impossible. It's certainly not impossible because a lot of people are. It's just, I think, as a media, I think more and more people perceive it to be something that they shouldn't have to pay for. And there's a lot of places you can listen to music without having to pay for it, like streaming. I think a lot of people still do happily. I certainly happily pay for things that I want to have, but I find myself, using things like streaming services and all other kind of alternate sources for music that I don't have to pay for, just because it's just becoming so ubiquitous. Certainly, if you're a musician and you want to produce your own music, you want to distribute it, and there's just so many wonderful ways to do that now, and I'm living proof of that. I mean, I don't know if I have any business, putting music out there. Yeah, I don't know how good it is. I'm just happy I'm able to do it. It's never been easier to do, but it's also at the same time, it's pretty hard.
Yeah, I think that's one of that's kind of the paradox that I'm getting from musicians. I mean, it's like I've interviewed bands, Ed, that have said, we're going to put all of our music out there for free, whatever, wherever we can, so people can listen to it, and then we'll go from there and see if we build a fan base and things of that nature. Now, that's not the easiest thing to do. Other artists, I've had artists on here that said, if you want to hear my music, you got to pay for it. That's basically it. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. We're not going any other direction. I'm kind of in the middle there. Hold on a second. My little dog Charlie is barking. He'd probably bark through all the Black Owl interviews, so you may be familiar with him.
That's okay.
Yeah, but one of the things that I think, if I was looking at it from a managerial standpoint, how do you get your music out? I mean, you want people to hear it, but you also want to make money. You should make money from it. I mean, it's your product. It's not going to be there unless there's the musicians. The musicians, the artists, the people that really deserve to get paid for what they're doing.
This conversation with my friends who I make music with, and I think the one overriding theme that we keep coming back to is that you have to do this because you love making the music first. I think the money aspect of it has to be secondary in order for you to have any enjoyment from it at all. I mean, the fact that you're listening to it and playing it and anybody can listen to it, if they enjoy it, I mean, that's kind of my payment, really. As cheesy as that might sound, I make music because I love to make music. I love to hear, I love the challenge of writing a good song. I'm really happy if I'm able to do that, if I'm able to make a song that somebody likes. You have to first find fulfillment in the process and the enjoyment first. Otherwise, I think you're in for a lot of disappointment. this genre, this rock and roll, this rock genre is not a big money maker anyway. I mean, I at least from what I can hear, I mean, my kids don't necessarily listen to it. You know, they listen to rap and, you know, a lot of great pop music out there, but it's not this genre. And,
that's a good point.
I don't really know. It's hard to say, but I think first and foremost, you just have to love the process. You have to love being a musician, being, you know, being allowed to play this stuff for people. I mean, it's a privilege to have people listen to it, I guess, is how I view it. You know, if you like it, that makes me very happy.
When I've asked this question to the multiple musicians and artists that I've talked to, Ed, the number one reason they make it is the response they get back from the audience, from people that listen to it. And that's what drives most musicians. And it's also like you're saying, it's hard to kind of crack the music industry and what people like, because, you know, you've got the chicken and the egg thing. Are the kids today liking the way, are they being told what to listen to? Is it because of what they're listening to? It's, you know, being pumped into the, you know, YouTube and the things like that, or it's kind of forming what their opinions are. Or is it the other way around? I don't know that, but, you know, I do know that I've listened to music that is very popular, and I've never heard it. And people will say, "Don't you think this is great?" And I said, "Yeah, that's pretty good. And have you heard this? It's like all over the place." And I've never even heard of it. I guess it's the might be my age, coupled in with what kind of music I like, you know. But I think it's an interesting thing. I always kind of am interested in how people, you know, musicians look at it, because it is a kind of a tricky thing. And you know, some people I've talked to, Ed, have like, okay, I'm going to Los Angeles. That's it. I'm done. I'm picking up everything, my family and everything, and moving to Nashville or Los Angeles or something like that. And I followed some groups and bands, like a chronicle of them doing that. And I think that's interesting, too, because this one band told me, he said, "We thought it was going to be pretty cool until we got out there and found out in Los Angeles there's 5,000 other bands playing the same night we were." So he's kind of tough there. But I want people but I think you've got it nailed when you're saying you're doing it because you love it. And when you're doing that, you know, people can tell that. People can feel that. And, you know, I've talked to some people this morning about that. I listen to a lot of music, and I can hear music that's like kind of produced and it sounds great and everything is there, and it's like, but there's nothing to it. It's like shallow. And I can also tell when music is people are writing it because they love to do it, and it's coming from their, you know, somewhere deep inside. You can pick that up immediately, and I think that's an amazing thing. Now, one thing I want people to know, Ed, I want people to know about you. I know your, you know, rich music history and being in the Columbus music scene for a long time, and that's really an interesting thing too, because I've gotten kind of caught up in that Northwest, Ohio, Youngstown, Cleveland scene. I've interviewed a whole lot of people from there, and I think that, you know, I was doing that, and I was talking to all these different bands, and I thought, I got to start doing this with Columbus, you know, because there's a rich scene there, and I don't know why. You know, I was just doing it. There was just, I guess, opportunities for me, but I want people to know about you, and I want people to know about, you know, your history. So let's start the genesis of Ed Shuttleworth. Where you started off, where you grew up, and how you got started in music, and some of the first things that you, you know, the bands or things that you got involved with.
Well, I started playing when I was 17. I'd always wanted to play guitar, but my sister was a really good singer-songwriter, so she taught me how to play. I don't think that things really got serious for me until, I mean, I was starting to play in the 80s with a cover band called the New Darts with some really close friends of mine that I'm still friends with. And it was at that time I met Ronald, because he was Ronald Cole, because he was playing with the band called Ronald Cole Trillionaires, which to this day I still consider probably be the finest Columbus musical act I've ever seen. I was fortunate to get to play with Ronald for a couple of years, 87, 88, 89. That was post Trillionaires. It was our Ronald Cole band. And
right.
We recorded an album's worth of songs, but we never released it. The masters are floating out there somewhere. I'm not even sure where they are. I thought about sending you maybe an MP3 or two, but the recordings are so poorly mixed. They just don't sound any good. I don't know. I think my copies of them are just really bad. But there's a great documentary being made about Ronald, produced by a fellow named Paul Provenzano and another guy named John Papa. And if you guys are on Facebook, please look up Destination Zero. It's going to be a wonderful movie when it does come out. I'm not sure how close they are to being finished with it, but it's going to be really something special. So I was lucky to be part of that. I really do consider myself lucky.
Now, how did that start? How did your relationship, like you were in a band and Ronald was in a band. When did you guys meet? And what was it that you thought? And I've heard the same thing. That's one of the reasons I kind of wanted to go back to this. I know you've got a lot of things going on now, but I always like to go back to the roots and to the history and back to that, you know, that 80s scene here in Columbus. There was a lot of good bands playing at that time. We talk about the internet. We talk about back then there was no internet, okay? So people couldn't hear it. Now there's all this exposure to everything. Now that you know every band that comes out of a band would start this afternoon, they could get their stuff out.
And
but back then it was more, I don't know, it was more mysterious. I can remember people talking about Ronald Cole and the Trillionaires and talking about going to hear them live and how amazing that was. And his show, amazing, his live show was just incredible. That kind of stuff today, I think that's a little bit missing right now because of YouTube, because of that, the exposure that bands have. But there was that mystique. Do you agree with that? Like waiting in line to go to
absolutely.
A club to hear?
There was not only word of mouth mystique, but if you were able to make a record back then, that was a huge deal. I mean, to have an album, you would get your album listened to simply because you made one. Nowadays, you can make a CD and people just, you hand it to somebody and they laugh at you almost. It's like, what's this? Yeah, I don't want to listen to that. Things have changed so much. I mean, for good and bad, of course, but yeah, you had to be really good. Nowadays, you can get yourself some exposure. You can do your own distribution, but everybody has the access to it. So you've got a lot of crap in there along with good stuff. So it kind of clogs the bandwidth a little bit. So people get a little weary of trying to sift through it and find good things because it's kind of hard to do. It's time. But back then, if you were good, people would talk about you, and if you made an album that got listened to, not all albums were good, but, you know, you had to really have something going on to have, you know, to have a record. And it's different now.
Yeah, completely different now. So back then, describe if you could take a couple minutes, Ed, to talk about the music scene back in that early mid 80s scene and what it was like. I mean, you were a part of that, and it's the people that don't know that, some of the people that were popular and just how the music was back then, because I think it was that's kind of what I'd like to do. I'd like to dig that up a little bit, and also I'd love to have some of the other bands on. I've had some of the Columbus groups on, but it's kind of hard sometimes to get a hold of them. But since you were there during that scene, if you could talk about that just for a little bit.
Well, you should try to reach Happy Chichester, who was with RC Mob. They were perhaps, you know, one of the biggest bands of the 80s,
right.
80s and into the 90s.
And then he was in Howland Molly, I think.
Howland Maggie.
Maggie, that's
Howland
it.
Maggie.
Howland Maggie. I knew it was Howland something.
That's his parents' names. It's Howland. Howland Maggie. there was a really great underground scene. You had the Gibson Brothers, Great Plains. I'm trying to think of some people you could contact. You could call Steve, get a hold of Steve Anderson, because he's friends with a lot of the cats that were really back in the day. And then Dave Butler was in a band called Joe Kofta, and they never really achieved any kind of big. They didn't have a lot of exposure, but you should listen to some of their songs, because they were like Guided by Voices before there was Guided by Voices, and their songs are just sublimely good. I think hundreds of them, and they're all cassette, lo-fi cassette, just gorgeous songs, fantastic songs. You should have Dave on and talk to Dave about it, because that was a wonderful, wonderful band. The scene was, there was Crazy Mamas, which I don't know if you've ever heard of Crazy Mamas, but
oh, yeah.
That was a fantastic little club upstairs, South Campus. They had Love and Rockets play there. Link Ray played there. They're not Columbus bands, but it was a great a place where all the prehistoric hipsters hung out. You know, it's great.
That's a good name for a band.
Dashes, there was Dashes, of course. I'm trying to think about who else I could tell you about. Columbus was a lot smaller then. It's grown so much. But like a lot of cities, it's got different areas now. It wasn't all just kind of, centralized in the campus area like it was back then. If you want to delve into the old Columbus scene, I could think of some names you could try to reach, and I don't see why they wouldn't talk to you about it. But
that'd be great.
Happy would be a good one. Steve Anderson and Dave come to mind. But it was an exciting scene. I was in my early 20s, and it was pretty fun.
Yeah,
it was great fun.
For the people out there, and we have listeners from all around that didn't know, and you were a part of Ronald Cole's band, what was it about him that you remember that you thought was special about playing with Ronald Cole, and what made him? He was a pretty big name here in this area.
Yeah, he was, and he deservedly so. Now, he took a lot of heat for being a little bit derivative stylistically. He drew a lot from David Bowie and Iggy Pop, and everybody knows that, at least anybody knows anything about Ronald. But the thing about Ronald was he was 100% committed to his craft, to his art. He wasn't a careerist. He wasn't, working, at an insurance company and singing on the side. He lived it, and he practiced very hard. He was very theatrical in his delivery. He was a good-looking guy. That didn't hurt. Had a great voice, a baritone voice, kind of on the lower end of the scale. But he was funny. He was sweet. A lot of people thought he had, an attitude, but he was kind of a local rock star, and some people thought they didn't like him, but I liked him. He was very sweet. He's kind of like a little kid at times, and he was funny. He's very funny. More than anybody I can think of, really, to be honest with you, he was completely dedicated to what he was trying to do, and I think that kind of led to his demise. I think he just probably felt like he'd reached the end of the line, and that was it. I don't know that for a fact, but I kind of feel like maybe that's what happened. It's just tragic that it happens.
It is tragic, and when you look at music, a couple of things came to my mind. I mean, when you're totally dedicated to it, and you know that this is going to be what you're going to do and be remembered by, and this is going to be the money that you're going to make, then it's a whole different story. Because a lot of musicians have to have jobs to pay, you know, bills and stuff like that. Not only musicians, but you know, artists and whatever. But when you're in it like that, I mean, to that person, a record deal would probably mean so much, because that would mean, okay, success and a way of validating, well, in a way, I guess, you know, your talent.
Yeah, getting the actual deal is just the beginning of the anxiety. I mean, it was, your ticket into the show. I mean, some people thought that was, let's get a record deal, and once you have a record deal, everything's fine. But obviously, you didn't sell, or your A&R guy got let go, and you're dead. For every band I've signed, you know, for everyone that ever actually had any sales, I don't know what the ratio of successful bands to unsuccessful bands that got signed or have been signed is, but it's got to be pretty bad.
Pretty lopsided. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and a lot of them I've talked to, Ed, that have had that were able to sign, you know, they had to pay everything back. They got advances. They had to pay all the advances back. Everything that they did, all their trips and all their shows and everything in their hotel, they all had to pay for all that. And a lot of them didn't know that. You know, it's like, we thought the record company paid for all that. Which I thought was pretty interesting. That's kind of the business side of it. That it's kind of boring, you know, to some people. But to me, it's always been kind of interesting, because you know, you hear a band, you go and hear a band and you listen to them and you think, wow, what did it take to get to where they are right now? What blood, sweat, and tears did they put into this? I know bands that have played for 30 and 40 years and probably have nothing to show as far as monetary, but they do it. But I just wanted to kind of touch on that, and I really appreciate your insight into that time, because it was different back then. The club scene was completely different. Right now, I mean, a lot of times you got it's a different feel to it. When you know, a band wants to play, sometimes you can play. People have told me this. I've never experienced it, but it, you know, if you want to play like at the Hard Rock or something, you can pay, and they'll let you play. And I thought, wow, that's pretty interesting. But I know back in the old days, there was this, there was this feel about Columbus, and there was a lot of raw energy with the music. And I just kind of like people to know a little bit about that. So I appreciate you going back in the time machine, Ed, and talking about that for a little bit. Now, I think
the one thing I want to mention is a lot. Some people think that, you know, musicians do what they do, you know, for you know, because they're starving for attention, or they, you know, for women or whatever reason. But I think, like all artists, I think you're compelled to do it. There's a compulsion that drives you to do it. I have people come up and say, yeah, I wish I could sing, or I wish I could play guitar, or I wish I could do this or that. And I said, well, you would if you were compelled to do it. That's really the difference, because I think everybody has the innate ability to do this type of thing. I think the difference is, you know, how, you know, whether you're utterly driven to do it. Like, you just, I mean, I feel a real sense of unease if I'm not producing, or if I'm not involved with music. It's just, it's hard to explain. I think that's probably true for, I think that's true for most artists, whether they're painters, writers. It's just something that you just have to do for whatever reason. The wonderful thing about music, because I've been a painter, I don't paint so much anymore, but I've been a painter. But I'll tell you that the wonderful thing about music are the fantastic friendships that I have as a result. And you know, I'm so grateful for the friends that I get to make music with, and the people that I get to meet through music. Nothing compares to it. Just nothing does.
And I think it's kind of cliche, but people say, get bit by the music bug, and I think that I totally agree with that. I think it's one of those things that, you can kind of put the guitar away for a while, but you're going to get it back. And it's I've talked to people that have put, something have happened in their lives, and they've whatever, and possibly put things away for, 10 to 20 years, but that is always with them. It's always there.
Oh,
And
yeah. Absolutely.
So I want to play. We've got quite a bit of music here, and I want you, Ed, for you to pick what we would play next. I know we've got song. You're involved now with. We played the Red Skylark song, and you're involved with David Butler with Pretty Mugs, and also with Bucko. What song would you like us to play next?
Well, that's a good question. I think if you want to play another Red Skylark, then we'll talk about that, and then I'll talk about Bucko and Pretty Mugs, I suppose.
Okay.
You played Mother Faces already, so don't play that. Yeah, let's maybe play Tear Me, because that's a song that originally, the very beginning of that song, the song was written by a friend of mine, Kirk Smith, in a band that he and I played in called Stick Figures. And I changed it quite a bit. And so now I say he co-wrote it, even though actually I think I should just say he wrote it. But I like the song. It's got a lot of tension to it. So if you want to play that,
Okay, that sounds great.
that'd be cool.
My guest is Ed Shuttleworth, and Ed is in many projects right now. He was in the Ronald Cole Band, and there's a documentary coming out, Destination Zero, and that will be interesting for everybody to see that. Ed, is there any way people can reach you on social media if they would like to hear more about your music?
Oh yeah, sure. Well, I'm not on there as an artist. I'm just on there as an individual, Ed Shuttleworth. And if you want to friend me up or send me any messages, that's fine. I don't have a Red Skylark page. I should. I'm on Bandcamp, and I am now on a label through the old 3C label group. Courtesy of Paul Meany. So I'm on Bandcamp as Red Skylark, and I'm on Facebook as Ed Shuttleworth for now.
And this is a Tear Me from Red Skylark, and we'll be right back with the rest of the interview with Ed. And we're back with Ed Shuttleworth on John Talk Radio. This is our December 12th show, and we're just glad you're here, Ed. It's been great talking to you. Let's talk about the current projects that you've got. We just heard a couple of songs from Red Skylark. Talk about that and what that was like getting that together and putting that together. What was the ideas behind that and the songwriting? Because I'm very interested in the songwriting part. And if you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Well, I have my own studio. I'm fortunate to have my own virtual studio in my basement, which is where I am right now. Spend a lot of time down here. I've always written my own songs. Through the Black Owls, I would write the music and Dave would sing, and Brandon and the guys would add parts or write songs too. But I had been accumulating my own songs for quite some time, and I would have a drummer friend of mine, Joe Nelson, come down from time to time and lay down drums, and got about maybe 20 or 30 songs, and I had, the Black Owls ended in October of 14, so there was some time I had to work on a CD, and so I just kind of chose 9 songs that I felt kind of worked together, ones that I thought were pretty good. I didn't want to have any filler or anything in there. I tried to, keep the record pretty solid and consistent. So got that finished in August, and I just put it up on Bandcamp and played a couple acoustic shows. So I didn't have a band behind it. I just go out and sing acoustically, not really well, but I just to get the songs out there. I was playing at Tree Bar. I was invited to come down by my friend Keith Novicki, who's super talented too. You should talk to him. He's really great. But Paul Nini, who has Old 3C Records, great musician as well, invited me to join his label group. So I created a label called Naked Waltz, and it's now it's part of that, which is great. It's wonderful. So it's on iTunes and Spotify and maybe Pandora. I'm not really sure yet if it's going to get on there, but I'm just really glad people like it. I don't really know what else to tell you about it. I mean, the songwriting process itself, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't,
Now, who do you bounce it off of, Ed? I mean, when you've got a song, who's the first person you bounce it off of to see if they think, oh, well, that's really great, or if you have somebody that's going to be honest with you? I think that's
important, too. Well, my significant other, the lovely Kathy Whittier, is always happy to listen to it and tell me what she thinks, which is she's got a great ear. My kids will listen if I'm lucky. Now, but Kathy's awesome. My dear friend Brandon Lossaker, who I play with in Bucko, who's just an amazing talent. Share songs with him. And Dave, who I'm still working with, and I'm excited to be putting together a record with him and maybe a band we can get together. Be great. Whoever will listen, put it that way.
Yeah, I kind of think that's kind of to me, it's kind of an interesting question because when you're working on a song and you've got it pretty much where you want it to be in your head and it sounds pretty good to you, and then you're thinking, okay, how's this going to sound to somebody else? And there's probably, people that you could go to that are going to say, no matter what, they're going to think it's great, or they're going to say it's great. But you've got to have somebody that's going to be able to say, that I think, to tell you the truth, I think somebody close to you is probably a good idea.
They're always ready to tell me, oh, that's crap or that's shit.
Sometimes other musicians are a little hard on you. I'm not you, but I mean on me. And whenever I play something, I would be like, oh, are you kidding? We can't do that. And I would think, okay. And I'd go back in my little cave, you know.
No, it's terrifying. It's pretty terrifying because, I don't know. I mean, I like to think I know when something's working. And the worst thing in the world is when I think I have a song that I think is really great. You know, maybe I work till 3 or 4 in the morning, sounding really good, and I'm really happy, and I go to bed, and I come back down, it's like, oh, no, it's just this cheesy lump of rubbish. Horrible.
Are you your worst critic, Ed, when it comes to things like that?
God. Yeah, incurable. Terrible, I guess. I mean, I don't know.
I think it's interesting.
Probably I am, yeah. I'm sure I am. But, yeah, keeps me going, though. But, yeah, it's like I just really want to write a good song, and it's not easy. It's really hard. It's harder than...
I think you've accomplished it. I seriously, when I played Mother Faces, I think that's one of those songs, you know, when I listen to that, I it's just like, wow, it just flows so good. And I get it in my head sometimes. And that's a good song when it's like, wow, you know, it really hits hard right where you need it to. And it's got great, and all of your songs flow. And that's what I was going to ask you about on that album. Did you have the same mindset when you were writing the songs, or did they just kind of come together like that?
Oh, no, they're all recorded in different, and written and recorded at different periods, and just kind of just cobbled them together because they seem to work together. I'm glad you like them. And John, I mean, I know you listen to an awful lot of music, so if you like them, that's just amazing to me. That's just, you have no idea. But they were not written in any kind of order. They were not written with the idea of them working. You know, wasn't like, I'm not like Pete Townsend writing Tommy. It's more like, you know, I got this song over here, I got this song over here, and this one, you know, they all just, I don't know. I mean, I'm not even sure how well they really work together. But let's just put it this way: they were the songs that were giving me the least amount of indigestion at the time.
Oh, that's funny.
That's how I should put it. Because, you know, it's like you gotta, once you put the thing out there, it's like you can't take it back and change it. You know, it's going out there, and if there's a wiener on board, it ain't coming off. You know? It's sailing on that ship, and no small amount of anxiety in the process, went into the process. It was, you know, but I mean, I'm thinking about the next thing and not even thinking so much about it anymore.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Gear Talk, because I think you have a distinct sound. How did that sound come, and what do you use? What's your weapon of choice, and what do you play through right now to get the sound that you want?
Oh, well, that's actually easy because most of the tracks are Telecaster through a Fender 59 Bandmaster reissue. I don't know. For some reason, I just know that amp and that guitar, and just it bites through and cuts through. I've got lots of other amps and guitars, but I just know what I'm going to get, so I can kind of work with that. I don't think there's acoustic on there too, but I think it's almost all Telecaster. I'm almost sure of it. And I think it's all Bandmaster. Did I say Bandmaster? I meant Basement, 59 Basement. It's like that, you know, 410 Tweed thing.
Those are awesome.
Great amplifier. Yeah.
Yep.
a Takamine acoustic. I think that's basically it.
So here's the question for you. How many guitars does Ed Shuttleworth have?
Oh, the big question is, how many more do I need?
I know. You gotta hide the FedEx or the UPS guy coming when your family's not at home. I figured that out.
Yeah. You know what? I don't think I have that many. I think maybe a dozen, maybe.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's not bad.
You know?
Yeah,
I think I got maybe a dozen or two dozen.
maybe three dozen.
It's not that obnoxious. I hope it's not that bad, but it's because I really, you know, I have no business buying. I've got three kids, and they're getting ready to go to school, college, and I really got no business just buying guitars. I mean, I look at a lot of guitars. My girlfriend laughs because, like, are you looking at guitars again? It's like porn. It's seriously bad. But, you know, G-Bass, Reverb, I mean, my God, I'm just looking at them. But I'm pretty good. I don't hit the buy button that often.
Yeah, I think
I
that's
hit the
really.
Sell button.
That's always a challenge, you know. It's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's like bass guitars, and I'm looking at these old, you know, classic ones, and I have no reason to buy any of them, but it's so cool.
They're fun to have on the wall, man. They look cool on the wall.
Yeah, and you get them out. You know, when I get stressed out, I plug it in and play it, and then then I'm cool. But let's play. Let's play the song that we talked about, the project you're with now with David Butler, Pretty Mugs and Staggered Beatles. Would you like to talk about that before we play it?
Yeah, sure. We'll talk about that, and then we'll talk about Bucko. That sounds great.
Okay.
Yeah. Really, I want to tell you, because you're asking me about the process for the Red Skylark album. I got to tell you about this. This Pretty Mugs, which we just got up on Bandcamp, I think, just days ago. Was actually a series of songs that Dave and I were just playing down the basement. Because when we would practice, I would record it, and he would play on an electric kit, and I'd play on an amp, and I'd put my amp in the other room and mic it, and then the electronic drums would go into the computer, so we'd just Pro Tools it. So I had all these, I wouldn't say, a lot of them, but, you know, a bunch of songs that we were just literally writing at that moment. And these nine songs, each and every one of them, are the first time these songs are even, I mean, we're writing them as you're hearing them. It's actually pretty profound when you think about it.
Yeah.
I went back and I kind of had to do quite a bit of engineering on them. I had to do a little bit of slicing and dicing, added bass to them. My guitar playing is really raw. I'm literally writing the song as you're hearing it. Dave, unbelievably, is playing drums and singing, making up the melody, reading this, and I mean, he's as you're hearing it, he's writing this.
Wow.
We did this actually on a bunch of songs on our double album, Black Owl's double album. What was the title of our double album? It has a title. Anyway, we did a double album, which was insane. But we did it on that record, too. But this is entirely nine songs, all pieced together from basically what amounts to recording, like demo sessions where we're actually writing the songs as we're recording them. So there are no previous versions. There's no other versions that are older than these versions, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Is I don't even think anybody else has ever done this. If they have, I don't know. But I've never heard of it. But so then kind of re-engineer it, clean them up. Luckily, they weren't that rough to start with. It wasn't that hard to do, but I had to fix some things and add bass to it, and then Dave would put backing vocals, and then he came up with all these really fun effects, like he had this foreign language app on his iPhone. So you can hear on the first song this Japanese translation of the main lyric, which just sounds great. It turns out so well.
Yeah, that's
and he
cool.
does it again in Spanish on another song. And then we found some funny sound effects like motorcycles and all kinds of stuff just to fit the theme of the song. So it was a really, really fun record. I don't have a single solo in the whole damn thing. I didn't really add any additional guitar parts. I think maybe on one or two songs I did. And then I threw bass on everything. So it's really stripped down. It's like a guitar player, a bass player, a drummer, a singer, and then some of these little effects. So it's very sparse. It's not overproduced, or it's not too dense. It's just really fun and raw, but clever. Dave's lyrics are just, I don't know. I can't say enough about his writing ability. It's just, you already know how good it is. But
right, exactly.
Anyway, yeah. So we've had a lot of fun with that. And I think I gave you Staggered Beatles to listen to because it's a song that he wrote the lyrics when he was in Egypt. And I won't try to tell you what the song's about because I'll have to let him do it. And you'll have to actually have us come back. Maybe you can do a show about 3 months down the road.
Yeah, that'd
Dave
be great.
Can weigh in. I don't want to speak for him, but this is one of my favorite songs, and I love the lyrics because it's about, you know, it's written in Egypt, and it's really pretty remarkable. But it's pretty fun. It's got kind of a Led Zeppelin-y guitar riff in it. I don't want to.
Play it. Yeah, this is Pretty Mugs and Staggered Beatles, and we'll be right back to wrap up the interview with Ed Shuttleworth in just a minute. And we're back with Ed Shuttleworth. Ed, thank you so much for being on the show. It's a great time talking to you. I really appreciate it. The music is great. I'm a big fan. We just have about a minute left. We'll go out with the Bucko song, Wallow. And I just want the if there's anything you'd like to say in about a minute to the audience out there, to people about anything maybe coming up or anything you'd like to mention that I may have forgot.
Yeah. Well, I definitely didn't want to not talk about Bucko. That is the other guys from Black Owls, Brandon Lusiker, who's the finest songwriter musician I've ever worked with. Brian Kitzmiller, who was a drummer, wonderful drummer with Black Owls, and Josh Pilot. And they're probably going to play some of my songs at some point, but most of these are all Brandon songs right now. But they're in Cincinnati, and please check out the video for this. It's called Bucko, B-U-C-K-O. It's, the song's called Wallow. And I'm just really lucky to be working with these guys. I'm very fortunate, very grateful.
We'll go out with that song. Ed, thank you so much. Happy holidays. We'll have to get together and do another show soon. And thank you so much and have a great evening. And thanks, everybody, for listening to John Talk Radio and supporting independent musicians. So thanks, Ed.
Thank you, John. Happy Christmas to you.
Happy Christmas. Happy New Year. And we'll talk to everybody later. And everybody have a great evening. And this is Bucko with Wallow.